It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And I think I have quite a show this morning that you will very much enjoy. I am, as I mentioned last week, actually 2 weeks ago, I was headed to South Africa on what turned out to be a trip of a lifetime. And I say that now having had the pleasure of being to South Africa three times over the last 40 years. But this trip exceeded all those. I was bird hunting, and I was also doing some cultural work, which I guess I'll start off with describing. When I first went to South Africa 40 years ago, which I guess means I'm not quite as young as I once was, it was a country still at that point existing under apartheid, and a very, very different country than exists today. We landed in Durban, South Africa, which I had not been to before. I'd been to Cape Town and Johannesburg and around much of the coast. Durban, being on the more northeastern part of South Africa, is more tropical. It's a world-class city in many ways. In fact, it is a world-class city, but in other ways, it is a throwback to incredible poverty, overcrowding, lack of sanitation. It's a cultural extreme that is hard to describe unless you can see with your own eyes. And we stayed on the beach in Durban for the 2 days we were there in a wonderful hotel. But the reason for going to Durban was we were in the company of Dr. Bruce Walker, who is one of the world's foremost researchers on the HIV virus and on viruses in general, working out of Harvard University Medical School and Mass General. And Dr. Walker is leading the efforts in South Africa to try to come up with a vaccine to rid the world of the HIV virus. And so our experience with him was beyond belief. And maybe this part of the show, at least this part of my description of South Africa, doesn't have anything to do with the great outdoors this morning, although I'll certainly get to that as we've been moved out of Durban. But the experience in Durban will be with me for the rest of my life. We traveled with Dr. Walker to about an hour north of Durban into an area that is impoverished and very rural, and it is the epicenter of the HIV outbreak in South Africa. And in this particular area has the highest incidence of HIV infection in the world. So it is the petri dish, if you will, where research is being carried out. And we go from this really lavish, fabulous hotel on the beach in Durban and travel further away from the coast, and you get into ghettos that in America we couldn't even conceive exist. And I've been through South America, I've been through Nicaragua. These are horrible. And no sanitation. And we ended up in this little village where we actually ended up in a thatched hut on a floor, dirt floor, which had some carpets on it. And we were with the, I guess you would call them, the inspiration leaders of that Zulu tribe who Dr. Walker is working with. They are the medicine men and medicine women. They are the spiritual leaders. And what he is trying to do is to educate the spiritual leaders, which of course is the people to whom young girls come for advice and wisdom, no different than if you went to see your minister, I guess. And he's trying to educate them on the need for contraception and how they can avoid becoming infected with HIV. And what was stunning to me is that somewhere between 50 and 55 or maybe 60% of the young women in South Africa in the Zulu tribe are going to become infected with HIV. And so we were in this little tiny hut, and they were singing spiritually, sat in a circle around the edge, and they were singing spiritual songs and burning incense, and it's an out of world experience. And the little hut, which has it has a thatched roof and it has mud sides, has one door, no windows, and on the floor is some very primitive Zulu mats that we're kneeling on, and since we were there so long, our knees gave out, and we ended up sitting on, and we're listening to these songs, and they're dancing, and they're burning incense, and they, in their own language, are trying to ward off sickness, and in this case, they're working with Dr. Walker. So we then, from that experience, it's hard to imagine this is 2019, and just an hour away, you had every amenity the world has to offer, and then you are in the midst of this horrific plague that is sweeping, well, much of Africa, but the world as well. And Dr. Bruce Walker's work is on the cusp of getting a vaccine that people will be able to take to control the HIV virus as a vaccine, and it has other applications, which maybe sometime, if I'm fortunate enough to have them on the air, its applications to Parkinson's, and its application also to Alzheimer's. Dr. Walker feels this vaccine is on the cusp of addressing really, really horrific diseases in the world. But we then left this very primitive area, and we went to a hospital which is still primitive, but it's a hospital, and we listened to the tales of the young women from the Zulu tribe who are part of a program to try to educate other young women on how to avoid getting the HIV virus. And part of the whole program is education, and I must say, and I say this with, I don't really have any other words to say, it seems like an absolutely hopeless situation. And if Dr. Walker and others can come up with a virus, a vaccine, that will be the solution, because culturally, what we heard on that day is so diametrically opposed to all values that any of you listening have ever been brought up or known in your life. It was simply shocking. We sat there with these young girls, they were young ladies, 16 to early 20s, and the culture that they live in is that when they come of age, they essentially are taken in by elders of the tribe. And when I say elders of the tribe, I'm not talking about old men. I'm talking about men in their 30s and 40s. They take these young women in, and I really don't have another word to say for it other than they almost become sex slaves to these men. And that's probably the wrong word to use, but that's the interpretation that I had as I listened to their tales. And so when they come of age, men who might have some means compared to other men take them in, and they have a very high HIV infection rate. And, of course, then they infect these girls. And then when these girls become a little older, they infect other men. And so it's a societal issue. And as we sat around listening to this, I think all of us really for the first time had an understanding of the tribalism of certain parts of Africa, in this case, South Africa, and their culture. And their culture is one that is it's in another planet from what we consider to be anything that we would accept. And that, I guess, yes, I'm passing judgment. You have to pass judgment. But in their world, it's not passing judgment. It's the way it's been for thousands of years. It's how their society works. And here we come in to say you need to change how you've been living for thousands of years and bring our values to this culture, and in this case, bring our values, which is trying to stop the spread of HIV. It's an overwhelming, both emotional thing to sit there and be a part of and listen to these young ladies tell their tales of how they live and how they became infected with HIV and how the whole culture works. And then you think, we're trying to stop this. And there are millions and millions of people being infected every year in Africa with HIV. And, of course, it's spreading around the world. So that was all before we went off into the country and went bird hunting for five glorious days and went off into Kruger National Park for another few days and saw the wonderful wilds of Africa. But that part of my South African experience, I couldn't begin to move on to tell you about, which I will when we come back from the break, to tell you about what it's like to go bird hunting in South Africa, particularly as I've done that a number of times now and how it's changed over the years. But this was a truly eye-opening and very, very sad experience to see just what's going on in a part of the world where the HIV virus is an epidemic, and where millions of people are dying, and why they're dying, and how it is, it's culturally, they're culturally doomed. And I don't think that there's going to be a change in their culture overnight. And that's really what we came away with. It's going to have to be a drug solution, because culturally this is far different from anything we in America and probably much of the world either understand and certainly can rationalize. I'll be back in just a moment. And when I come back, let's move into the outdoors in South Africa. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter, brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Hope you had a great 4th of July, and as we close out the 4th of July weekend, you've had some time to spend some time in the outdoors and hopefully maybe even be able to take a child or a grandchild or a young kid, boy or girl, fishing or hiking or doing something. And I'm not going to spend much time this morning talking about the importance of the next generation or the next generation, depending on how you look at it, getting experiences in the outdoor, but study after study are showing just how well children do when they are exposed to nature versus children who are not exposed to nature, and how it affects not only sometimes their mental state, but also how it affects their physical state and their awareness of being in the outdoors. And if you haven't read it, Richard Lew's book is Last Child in the Woods is really the seminal book on this subject matter. A fabulous read. This morning, I'm going to start off before I left off last week, which I promised you I would do, and that is flying again across the ocean to South Africa, where I had two experiences that I found to be rather remarkable. I did talk last week about my experience in Durban and with HIV. I'm not talking about that today. We're moving back into the position of the Great Outdoors Show. I'm going to talk about two things that happened while I was there, one of which I think is so unbelievable, at least to an American, that I can't even fathom how it exists like this. But think of the country called Mozambique. No, I did not go to Mozambique. But I sat down with an individual who used to run a hunting concession in Mozambique. And in order to receive a concession for hunting big game in Mozambique, big game being the dangerous five, as they're known, elephants, lions, rhinos, leopards. You have to be able to have an anti-poaching program in place for the concession that you're going to run, or the government, and this is true of all the countries in Africa that I believe, or the government will not give you a permit to bring hunters in. And the funding from hunters in most of Africa provides the funds to stop the poaching of big game animals particularly elephants and rhinoceros, which are being poached at alarming rates for their ivory, which, of course, are then crushed down into an aphrodisiac, or believed to be an aphrodisiac powder, that is shipped to primarily to China. And anyone who doesn't believe that China is not in the middle of the illegal, illicit ivory trade has not spent any time talking to people in Africa who are in the middle of trying to stop that poaching. So I don't pretend to be an African expert. I don't pretend to be an expert on ivory trade. But I am fortunate to know individuals who are experts on this. And there is a direct tie between the purchase and transmission of transfer of ivory to China. And it's illegal, and it goes on virtually unimpeded, even as I'm talking to you this morning. So this individual had a hunting concession in Mozambique, and in order to have it, he had an anti-poaching program in place to protect the concession from poaching. The Chinese are not doing the poaching. The Chinese are paying people to do the poaching. And so he was running a concession, and he was extremely good at stopping poachers. He spent a great deal of money. He had helicopters. He had equipment, tracking devices, and on the very large concession, some 500,000 acres on which he was had permission to hunt, he virtually ended the poaching of elephants and rhinoceros. And what would happen is he would they would come in helicopters, or they would come in other means and burn the poachers' camps while the poachers were out poaching. And then they would, and when the poachers came back to camps, they would have, they would corral them, and they would take them to the authorities, and the authorities would not prosecute them. So, but the loss of equipment and the activities of this individual on this concession had a big impact, and you heard me say would not prosecute them. The government of Mozambique, in this case, individuals within the government of Mozambique, were on the take, which is not an uncommon occurrence, unfortunately, in Africa, and particularly, I guess, in Mozambique. So this individual was leading a group of hunters who had paid significant amounts of money to legally take big game animals. And they were in camp one evening, and the suddenly the camp was surrounded by military figures, and this individual was taken into custody, and he was charged with treason and being, I believe, a spy by the Mozambique government, and was thrown into a Mozambique jail. And if you can think of a worse place in the world to be than a jail in rural Mozambique, I'm not sure where it might be. He was put into a cell with other individuals who tried to assault him. The cell was uninhabitable. The food was inedible. And it was because he had been so successful at stopping the anti-poaching rings that it worked its way up the Mozambique government ladder, if you will, to individuals who were being paid off by the poaching rings' financial resources. And they put an end to this individual's ability to stop poaching by throwing him in jail, where he would have sat and rotted and died. And this is an individual who has spent much of his life trying to protect the wildlife resources of the southern part of Africa, South Africa, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, an individual who has made a huge difference in Africa when it comes to controlling the poaching of big game animals. So he is sitting in a Mozambique jail being badly treated, and the individuals who put him there are being paid by the poaching rings. So they thought this would be the end of him and his poaching ring. But as happens in South Africa, not in South Africa, what happens in Mozambique and I guess other areas of Africa is it depends on who you know. And if you're sitting here listening or driving down the road listening to this story this morning, going, this can't be true, it is true.
I sat and looked eye to eye with this individual, and he told me the full story, the graphic details of which I will not go into on the air, but you can only imagine what might have happened in a Mozambique jail cell to a South African individual. So after being in jail for a period of days, I believe a week, other individuals from South Africa were made aware of this, and through the South African government into the Mozambique government, the process to have this individual released and taken out of the country took place. The amount of money that changed hands is absolutely shocking to have this take place, but it goes to show that at least in Mozambique, anyone can be bought. And so what happened to this individual was a group of South African leaders rallied around him, raised the money to have him get out of jail. He went before a judge. The judge told him he had a matter of hours to get out of the country or he would remain in jail for life. And during that time, he left Mozambique and obviously has never returned. That is what goes on in the poaching rings of the southern part of Africa. It is absolutely abhorrent what is taking place. And we look at all these efforts to try to stop poaching and to stop the trade of ivory, and we can circle back to the fact that Asia, primarily China, is the place where this ivory is being sold. And when we listen to the discussion about tariffs and all these things with China, how come there's no question about, wait a minute, what is China doing to African wildlife resources? Why is there no discussion of this? That's a big question. We talk about all the products that are now on tariff lists, but there's no discussion about that China is, in fact, the main driver behind the poaching of big game animals in Africa for the ivory that they possess to go to China to be turned into ivory trinkets and to be turned into this powder aphrodisiac. That's what's driving the illegal trade of ivory in Africa. And if you don't believe me, just go to South Africa and talk to some people who've seen this firsthand, and talk with people or an individual who's actually spent time in a Mozambique jail trying to stop this and the consequences of how high up in the government the corruption runs. Unfortunately, it's a sad story, but it's a true story. He, though, is alive and well and is doing great, but nearly lost his life trying to protect the wildlife resources of Africa. I'll be back in just a moment with more on the Great Outdoors Show. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
In the field, hunters need to be alert, sense the environment around them, and know exactly where they are, communicate seamlessly with their dogs. And when it comes to pickup trucks, you want the same qualities. The all-new Chevy Silverado comes with an available 4G Wi-Fi hotspot for seamless communication. It's designed to handle the toughest loads with advanced trailering technology, tough on the road and off. And the all-new design gives you more cargo space than the competition. Chevy Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup on the road. Plus, there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer about the Big Fix lease. It's an amazing lease deal that can lower your monthly payments and give you more Chevy, all for less money. That's a treasure hunt. So head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and see why Chevy is the number one best-selling brand in Chicagoland, now 8 years running.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, and I doubt on this show this week alone I will get through what was an incredible fortnight of wildlife viewing and cultural experiences in South Africa. But we're going to move out of Durban and we're going to move up into the countryside of northeastern Africa and end up near a town appropriately called Settlers. And the purpose of this leg of my trip was actually very much related to what I do every day in my life, and it was
bird hunting and wildlife viewing and understanding what's taking place in conservation in Africa, in this case in South Africa and in Zimbabwe. So we traveled by air, an incredible experience, flying over in a small plane, flying from Durban up to the settlers area. It's once you get out of the urban areas of Africa, South Africa, and they're roughly, although it's interesting, the range of estimates we had between 38 million and 50 million people now living in South Africa, which is almost three times the number of people that were living there when I first went there 40 years ago. But once you get out of the urban areas, it is raw country, not a lot of roads, and wide open spaces, a lot of agriculture, although what is taking place in South Africa in the agricultural realm is also, as I mentioned, I was there 40 years ago before apartheid ended. Apartheid now is long gone, but we are seeing we being the South Africans, are seeing the results now of, in Zimbabwe, the government just came in and took the land and threw people off the land and redistributed the property. That's not happening in South Africa. What is happening in South Africa is there is something called native land claims. And so the tribal leaders can go into a court and say, this section of land or this 10,000 acres of land actually was our tribal lands, and we should have it back. And so there's a process that they go through. The claim is filed. The government validates it, and I think it's been validated in virtually every single case. But unlike in Zimbabwe, they don't come in and just say, thank you, goodbye, get out of here. In South Africa, they come in, the government comes and says, there's been a tribal claim on your land, you have to sell. And the government sets the price, and the price, from what we were told by these landowners on whose farms we were hunting, the price is a fair price, although it's set by the government, and so there's no competition. You could have the best bird hunting property in northeastern South Africa, and it could be worth 10 times what the government wants to pay you for it if it could be sold to somebody of your interested in bird hunting. But you don't have that option. The government sets the price. The same thing, you could have one of the most fertile farms, and we were on one of the most fertile farms, and it could be worth, let's say, $5,000 an acre to a neighboring landowner who really wants to expand their farm. And the government says, no, it's worth $2,000 an acre. You got $2,000 an acre. But there is a compensation system, and this is what's now happening across South Africa. And it is leading to a system that doesn't work very well. And I'm not saying that there doesn't need to be some way to figure out the incredible racial and economic imbalance in South Africa. I believe that the white population in South Africa now is something only like 3 or 4 million people out of 40, so call it 10%, and they probably own 99% of the land that's privately held. There is a huge problem. But what's happening is, and when we found when we went to go bird hunting, is that these farms, which had been in white ownership, have now been repossessed by the government, and the landowners who built the farms, built the houses, built all the infrastructure are gone. They move off, and the government then decides who in the local village is going to be able to go live in these places, and they do. They move in. It's not quite the same. They don't have the financial resources. Buildings fall down. The lodge we were staying in, or actually the lodge we were supposed to be staying in, was recently repossessed by the government. And so the lodge didn't exist. And in just a short period of time, it fell into a terrible situation of disrepair. So what then happens is, because when the government buys the land back and gives it to an individual or a group of individuals, they don't have any economic means to buy equipment to farm. They don't have any skills to do this. So what's happening is then the government is turning around and leasing back the property to the landowner who had lived there but was taken off the land, because they have all the equipment and they have the ability to farm the property. They have the financing and all of that. So you end up with a flipping of land ownership, and now you have the people who used to own the land becoming tenant farmers for the government. we'll see how that works over time. But personally, from the experiences I've had in my life, and I'm sure many of you have, the pride of private ownership and taking care of something you own far outweighs taking care of something that you're renting. It's like they say about a rental car. You know, the two cars that can go anywhere, a Chevy Blazer and a rental. And something you rent's just not going to be taken as good care of. So I think it's a situation that is unfolding, and it certainly impacted how we hunted and where we hunted and what we were able to do. So South Africa, and I'm going to leave on this note because next week I'm going to pick up with actual bird hunting and the trips travel we did into the country, and also an absolutely horrific, and I mean horrific, firsthand, it was described to me by the individual who ended up in a Zimbabwe jail because he was trying to stop the poaching rings for rhinoceros and elephant. This is a very different world that's taking place in the southern part of the African continent than anything we read about in the newspapers, and it's quite shocking what the story I was told recounted by the individual who spent many days in Zimbabwe in jail and the corruption that took place, all because he was trying to stop poachers from shooting elephants. Also, I'll take you bird hunting with guinea fowl and South African ducks and geese. Let's just put it this way. If you have the chance to go to South Africa, go. The country's changing faster than I think a lot of people realize, and some of the opportunities which I had may not be available in the future. It's a remarkable country. I'll be back next week with more on the Great Outdoors Show. Thank you for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of America in Chicago, 720 WGN.